The Sound Fountain presents the final of three programs looking at the concept of home, longing and belonging, produced and presented by Dheera Sujan.
My name is Fuad Hussain. I have been in Holland since 1975. My age is 50 years, and I came from Iraqi Kurdistan.
The exile.
My name is Tsering Chamba. I'm from Tibet. I come from southwest of Tibet. I was 4.5 years old when my parents left Tibet. And I grew up in India. I've been living in Holland since 1982.
The refugee.
My name is Sunil Ramdas. I am from Suriname. And I came to Holland in my 20s to study. And the aim was to study here for about 6-7 years and going back to help to build your country. But I never left.
The immigrant.
I'm Hanifa Dean. I often describe myself as a Kalgoorlie Paki, but I never let anyone else call me that. I guess you could call me a third generation Australian.
The third generation.
Idea of home, it is a romanticized concept of people who don't really believe that they are inventing it. It's an invention.
Although I have been discriminated in my country, I am proud that I am a child of many cultures. I consider myself a child of Kurdish culture, Arabic culture, Persian culture. And of course, when I came to Europe, European culture became also part of my identity.
People are not like plants. People like birds. They move and they change their minds and they go forward, they go backward. They're in different places all the time. So the idea of belonging is based on fiction.
Childhood.
I tell my daughter about my childhood so that she can compare her childhood and my childhood. When she's going to bed, sometimes I tell her stories when I heard it from my mother, but I translate that in Dutch language, of course. I tell her about the cities there. I tell her about my family there. I tell her about the nature there. I tell her about the cultural aspect there. Sometimes she's also asking about my political ideas. It is difficult to describe for a child, especially your own child, how is it possible for a man who can travel everywhere, actually, in the world, except his own country. But I think in this age, my daughter has understood that there is a system and there is somebody there, and she knows his name, Saddam Hussein. And because of that guy who's in power, I can't go back to my country. And sometimes when I went to that part of the country, Kurdish area, she was very afraid. She thought that I will be arrested there. But still, she says always, I will go back with you. If Saddam Hussein will not be there, then I would like to go back with you.
I think what binds us together are the things that you grow up with that stem from family. Keeping together as a family, as a minority group in Australia, facing everyone else. Like, loyalty is very, very important. We'll fight like mad, but we stand together as a family. Now, I think that's something that the diaspora generally has in many, many countries around the world. So the sense of family, the sense of having to act collectively, lasts through many generations. People say, don't you rebel? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Well, you do it in your own way, but there's always the family there.
My children were not connected to India at all until recently, and I'm really working hard to change that. I'll give you an example. You know, when I realized how disconnected my children were from India, is when we were watching an Indian film, which we did very sporadically on Sunday afternoon just for nostalgic reasons and so on. And my little son of 6 looked at this film, and it was a very traditional film about village life. And he asked me why people were always, before they met someone, were picking up something from the ground. I said, picking up something from the floor? He says, yes. I said, no, that's the way they greet each other. And then I realized that my son didn't understand the paying respect of touching the feet of the father, the mother. And that shocked me. I said, well, no, this is not possible. The boy looks like an Indian. He has an Indian name, and he knows really nothing about India. So I started to bring in Indian films because that's how it worked with me. I mean, I became an Indian through cinema, not because my parents really taught me the Ramayana or the Bhagavad Gita. I have a satellite dish, which I'm a little bit ashamed of, in the backyard, just to watch Sony Television and AsianNet and ZTV. And my children liked Shah Rukh Khan. Now I think I succeeded quite well.
We were in Dharamsala, and Dalai Lama's older sister had already started a nursery school. So I was put with my younger brother in that nursery school, and there was it. My parents had left to work on our road, but then we were like there, hundreds and hundreds of really crying, running nose kids, children. And I think we must have been also very dirty, I think, because in Tibet we hardly washed ourselves. So we were put in under charge of foster parents. So I stayed 1 year in that nursery school. And then there were also transit schools set up for older Tibetan children, you know, like after 5 till 15, 16, there were also thousands of them. My brother, my two sisters, they could go there, and after a year or something, then they were sent away to other Tibetan schools in Missouri, Simla, Darjeeling. I stayed 1 year there when I was 5 and a half. Then I was sent to Dalhousie to join other kids, 50 girls and 50 boys. There was also boarding school. I studied there, and I stayed in this school 11 years. Everybody was in the same situation, all the Tibetans. So that also was kind of for us at least one positive side, that you are not the only one who are in this situation. Otherwise, when I look back, I think it must have been very traumatic for us being left there. First, you just came from Tibet, going through such a difficult journey. And as soon as you got in Dharamsala, you were left there with, again, all those kids, crying kids. And you don't see your parents whole year. I was able to see my parents once a year, and that's for 2 months. We were allowed to go to our parents. There's a holiday, winter holiday. And the rest of the year, I haven't seen my parents. And then my two brothers were in one school, my two sisters were in another school. So we also saw each other once a year.
I think it is good for my children to have knowledge about part of their roots, the roots of her father. And if they can choose a part of that identity, I think it is not bad. I hope that my children actually will be children of multicultural societies, because multicultural society means for me that you will not have identity crisis. Some people, they think if you belong to many cultures, then you will grow up with kind of crisis. You don't know which kind of identity do you have. I don't think so like that. I think that if a child will be grown up with various cultures, that means you can be loyal to various identities, and that is enrichment.
Straddling two worlds is always difficult, but I think that kids everywhere, particularly kids growing up in immigrant societies, learn how to adroitly juggle those very slippery balls. You behave one way in your home. Then when you step out that door, you become somebody else. You hide the fact that you have a drink now and then. You carry mints around with you. And there are tensions within a household, and they're usually to do with the opposite sex. They're usually to do with certain taboos. I don't think that's a difficult thing. I think kids around the world are continually juggling those balls.
We went to India last year. I tried to reduce the amount of shock for the kids, because I really thought that they were too vulnerable and too small to have the same kind of shock I had when I was 23 and already in university. So I planned a kind of trip that would take me to Bombay and then from the airport immediately to Juhu. And I would take a hotel there for 2 days and then we would run away to Goa and we would take a great hotel there and a compound and be close. And they would be a little bit in India and a little bit outside of India. But of course, it doesn't work. I mean, the moment you are out of the airport, you already are in the reality of India. And they were looking outside and the car stopped at the traffic lights. And my daughter looked at a small child of exactly her length, her build, and her age probably, working on a building site. And this girl was working in that terrible sun of 1 o'clock, really dark and dirty. And she was looking at it with eyes that couldn't stop staring. She never thought that this was possible. And I pitied her, my daughter. The shocking thing was that she didn't ask any questions. She saw it, the car drove away, and she kept silent. And it took about 10, 15 minutes before she asked, why was this girl working there? Why wasn't she in school? And then we started to tell her what poverty means and so on, and what child labor is, etc., and how it works in India. But it was a shock.
I have learned to be very independent, taking care of myself, even polishing our shoes and washing our clothes. So I'm very grateful now. But on the other hand, when I think of my relationship with my parents and my brothers and sisters, and when I see my friends and how that's really sad that I did not get much time to learn my parents that well, because I saw them once a year. That was it. But I liked very much those 2 months every year. We really looked forward to go to see them. But end of the day, when you think, oh my God, oh no, all these years, I actually, 4 and 5 years, I was with my parents. After that, I actually didn't get time to get to know them. In 1971, my mother died. In 1979, my father died. So I can even count how many times, you know, I have seen my parents since we left Tibet. And that also goes for my brothers and sisters who are living in Canada now. I have hardly had time to get to know them good. Now I'm learning them, get to know them better now. And I hope it's not too late. In that way, I think personally very sad your family bond. You really did not have that.
I'm determined to take them back. And I'm determined to get them comfortable with the idea that there is something called India. Not because its culture is so important, but because it is important to be cosmopolitan. It's important to understand civilization. It's important to become civilized. It's important to have the idea that there are other people there living in that kind of circumstances, which are completely different from those spoiled and rich circumstances they live in here. It gives them a view on reality, which is very, very important. But now I am giving you a socially correct answer. The real answer is that I think that Indianness has something which is important. Don't ask me what, because I still don't know what it is. But I have a feeling that there is something in Indian culture which is worthwhile, just like there is something in Western culture which is very worthwhile.
Longing and belonging.
I don't know how long it takes to get a feeling of belonging. And the problem is that I never meet people who have the feeling of belonging. When I go to India, I meet all kinds of people and they never ever were born there where they are. I mean, if you go to Delhi, 2 of the 3 people came from somewhere else. And in Holland, belonging, if a Dutch person says he belongs, then he would always say, I belong in Brabant. And he lives in Hilversum. You know, it makes me think of people being treated like plants, like trees. A tree belongs there because when you put it in the ground, it will remain there and it will do nothing. It won't go anywhere. People are not like plants. People like birds. They move and they change their minds and they go forward, they go backward. They are at different places all the time. So the idea of belonging is based on fiction. It's based on the idea of a country, of community, of society, which was an important part of civilization, especially in the last century. But we got rid of that idea, didn't we? I mean, how important is it to have a feeling of belonging when that feeling is completely disturbed the moment you put on your computer and you are on the internet? And when you can buy a ticket to move to another side of the globe for about 2,000 guilders?
I have a very strong picture of the color of the monastery. There was a monastery, and the stupa, it doesn't exist anymore. It's destroyed by the Chinese. And also the way two rivers, one came running through one side of the village and other side of it. And one other thing, I think, when my father would leave, because my father was a business, I think, he travels a lot. And when he comes after a couple of months back, he would bring oranges, because the village where I come from, didn't grow there. So the smell of orange and the skin of orange that my sisters, my older sisters, they would make jewelries and would wear in their ears. And yeah, those kind of things, I do remember. Yeah.
I'm half stranger, half insider with many of the cultural things that I look at. One part of me looks at it with the eyes of an insider when I look at concepts like shame and honour and duty and compassion and charity. Another part of me stands back and looks at it through westernised eyes. But there's a tension there, a pull. Shaming one's parents is a terrible, terrible thing. Disrespecting the elderly, etc. I mean, I had to explain to my husband very carefully, my husband is German, why we would not never, no matter how many years we were married, sit together on a sofa in front of my father. And why my father would always be served first by me, even offering him a piece of cake or passing the sugar, that I would focus on my father, etc. Those things are difficult for other people to understand. Brought up here or not, I still abide by certain things.
I thought I am a visitor here. For 5-6 years, I considered myself as a visitor, although I began to learn some Dutch language. I went to the university, I studied, but I was more busy actually with my country, thinking about my country, thinking about what can I do for the people there, thinking, of course, about my family. All these aspects played a major role in the first period. Even when I finished my study, I thought I will go one day back to my country, as if I was in a train, and the train was still continuing from one station to another, and I thought the last station it will be just my country. But I, at the same time, I was believing that even if you are waiting, you must prepare yourself for that day. I was not like some of my friends, actually. They thought, we will be back, so if we will be back, you must not be involved in this country, because if you are going to be involved in social activities, political activities, cultural activities, then you will lose your identity. I was not from that kind of people. I was thinking that everybody in other countries who is being a refugee in another country or immigrating to other country, he has got rights, but he has got also duties towards the new society. So while thinking about future and going back, I was preparing myself also to find my own way in this country. And I studied here. I began to later on to be a teacher. And I taught for 10 years political science. And it took a long time. But nowadays, I'm thinking differently about going back. I feel now the time has passed. The train has reached the station, which is not my aim, but I am still satisfied because I think that in your life you can go to various stations and being for a while there, and once again you can catch the train and go once again to another one.
Where's home?
It's a difficult question to answer. Where is home? Is home where I am? Is home where my husband and I are together? We roam around a lot. To me, coming back here is coming back to a place where I can write. I think this is my home. This house up in the hills in Australia is my home.
I started to think of home when people asked me where I was from and where I really felt at home. And I realized that I always said that the home was that beautiful little house in Nikeri where I only lived for 4 years. I mean, I was about four when I arrived there. My father was a teacher in Nikeri. Nikeri is a place very far from Paramaribo, about 200 kilometers only, but it was four rivers further. You had to cross four rivers to reach there, so it was really very, very far. And it took you about 2 days to arrive there. And that little house, where I lived from my fourth till my eighth, I kind of reinvented as home. And I have an idea why. Because that was the period where my parents were happy and where there was a kind of family life, where my mother used to bake cake and my father was a respected school teacher and we were respected people and my parents wouldn't fight. And they even loved each other, I think, in that period. And that's home. But all the rest, living in Paramaribo, my parents got divorced and my mother went to live somewhere else, so I had two houses to live in. None of them were home. I mean, if I was at home with my mother, I would feel that I was betraying my father. If I was at home with my father, I would feel betraying my mother. So when I came to Holland, that feeling was gone, and that idea of home kind of evaporated. Parts of home are, for instance, here in Holland, where I live now. Parts of home are in India, and parts of home are in Suriname. And you would say, well, that's logic because I was born in Suriname, my great-grandparents came from India, and I now live in Holland. But imagine my surprise when I went to Trinidad last year and found parts of home even there. Then I realized, oh, Jesus, this is something really invented. I walked through the streets of Port of Spain and I really, really felt kind of home because the goods that were being sold reminded me of the Kirpalani stores in Suriname. The attitude of the Indians were similar. The way they dressed, the way the buses used to drive, the way they sell their rotis and so on. I mean, it was home again.
I'm still thinking about my country. I can't say that I have left my country. I consider there my home. But I must say that my home is also here because I have passed now almost half of my life here. I've got my wife here, my children here, many, many friends here. I build many things here. So home is, sometimes I think when I'm there, I would like to be here. When I'm here, I would like to be there. But doesn't mean that I am between. I've got many homes. My aim and my idea is when my country will be liberated, to be 6 months there and 6 months here. Because I know gradually that it will be difficult for me to be all the time there. And I know when, if my country will be liberated, because now I have got an excuse, my country is not liberated. But if my country will be liberated, then I will lose that excuse. That means then I have got to choose. And it will be very difficult not to choose both.
You see, I have a dream of never retiring. because I intend to keep on pushing that pen and saying outrageous things for many years to come. And I believe a moving target is also harder to hit. So as I say, I'm a travelling woman. But I really would like to spend 6 months of the year outside of Australia. But I guess I want the best of both. I want to continue being the hybrid that I am. Part of me yearns to get away from these shores, but then you want to come back. You want to be able to retreat to a place of comfort where you have family and friends and lick your wounds.
Question people speak about these days that, oh, would Tibetans living outside would go? Should Tibet become free tomorrow? I think it's a big question. Many Tibetans who are used to living wherever they are, I don't know. I cannot say that every single Tibetan will go back tomorrow. But I certainly would like to go back. I believe that the Tibetans inside Tibet, just to see that whether you can do something there. I really have this feeling, yes, to meet with them and this feeling of, yes, we have done it. That moment, I would like to share, not necessarily with the Tibetans in India, but with the Tibetans inside who have been the most important inspiration for me to go on. I would certainly go and hug with one of them at least, whoever, I don't care.
When somebody will be older, it is natural that he thinks more about the past. You see, I left my country when I was 25 years old almost, so I was grown up. And I had friends there, I had my family there, I have still my family there, and I loved my country. So when I will be older, I think I will think more about my country. I say nowadays that if I will be old, I will not go here to those places where they are taking care of the older people. I can't live there. I have visited some of these places, and that's not my place. I dream about a place which is near my town with my children. If they are coming visiting me, they can stay in Europe. That's their own choice. But I would love if they would come and visit me with my wife there and have the chance to come back also to Europe. But for myself, if I can decide in the future, I will spend my older time there, going back to my roots.
The question is not where you come home when you finish the trip. The question is, do you ever finish the trip? I don't have the feeling that people really finish their trips. And of course, this house, for instance, is home for me because I say it is. But when you ask me whether I really, really believe that this is home completely, then I should be able to answer your second question is, what are the first names of your neighbor next door? And really, I wouldn't know. I mean, I would know the first names, maybe. But I wouldn't know anything else. I wouldn't know where they really work or whether they are happy or what their aims in life are or what their unhappiness is about or whether they had a bad youth. I wouldn't. So how home is home?
Longing and Belonging, the final of the three-part series looking at the concept of home, was produced and presented by Dhira Sujan. Sound engineer, Frank Meyer. Thanks go to Chering Champa, Hanifa Deen, Fuad Hussein, and Anil Ramdas. Titles read by Jackie Spears. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.